This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Lung cancer is by far the leading cause of cancer death among both men and women in the United States. Smoking is by far the biggest risk factor, but there are other risk factors, and thousands of non-smokers each year are diagnosed with lung cancer. Joining us to look at risks, symptoms, treatments, and research for lung cancer are Dr. Elsie Pina, University of Cincinnati College of Medicine Associate Professor and UC Health Pulmonologist, Patrice Urban, an advocate with the Lung Cancer Alliance, and Kathy Sinclair, a lung cancer survivor who also works with the Lung Cancer Alliance. And thanks, everybody, for being here this afternoon. You can join the conversation, 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at wvxu.org with your questions and comments, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Kathy, what are some of the key statistics that surround lung cancer?
Well, as you've mentioned, it is the leading cause of cancer death. I think one of the statistics that might surprise people and why we're so grateful to be here today is that today, walking around in the U.S., there are 3 million women who have had breast cancer. There are 3 million men who have prostate cancer. And we hear lots about these cancers. There's a lot of awareness, a lot of attention. People might be surprised to know that the number one cancer killer, there's approximately 403,000 people walking around in the U.S. today. I am fortunate to be one of those people.
And we're glad for your sake that you are, Kathy. Patrice, what about some of the statistics that stand out in your mind?
You know, one thing that drew me as I got to know more about lung cancer, and my brother did actually pass away from lung cancer five years ago, is that you always watch the news and you see about murders, car accidents, suicides, you know, mass killings, and you think all these other things are the number one killer in the United States of all deaths. And lung cancer is the number two of everything, not even related to cancer.
Wow.
Heart disease is the only thing in the entire United States that beats lung cancer as the number one killer. So lung cancer, and I think why we're here today is to say, get more awareness out there that lung cancer is our number two killer in the whole United States, the number one cancer killer, but how can we get more awareness out and get more research and funding?
And Dr. Pina?
And I think that's exactly true. And we're not behind heart disease by much. We're talking, 24% and 23% in terms of both men and women. And lung cancer is the number one cancer killer. I think the problem has been it's been an orphan child. It's had a bad stigma based on smoking. And yes, we know that 90% of the lung cancer, is caused by smoking, but there are definitely other risk factors involved in lung cancer. And probably most powerful, I think, to think is that there are approximately 224,000 new cases of lung cancer each year, 159,000 deaths, men and women included, 70,000 are women, so the other 90%, 90,000 are men. But if you think about it, that's equivalent to one 737 plane crashing from the sky and hitting the ground with airliners hitting and crashing every day of the year.
Now
that's powerful.
That is.
That's powerful.
You brought up an interesting point, Dr. Pina, and I've seen this in my own family experience. My sister-in-law never smoked a day in her life. She was recently diagnosed with lung cancer, and one of the things that she's been amazed by is the number of people who say, you got this by smoking, or I never knew you smoked. That comes up quite frequently with her. And is that, when we're talking about the stigma that's attached to the disease, is that the stigma?
Right. The stigma is that lung cancer is solely caused by smoking. It's not solely caused. Certainly the majority, 90% is, but there are enormous amount of individuals out there, men and women, who have never smoked a day in their life and do have lung cancer. And when we look at the number of women with lung cancer, 19% of those women diagnosed, or 19-20% of those women diagnosed with lung cancer have never smoked a day in their life. And about 9% of the men who have been diagnosed with lung cancer have never smoked a day in their life.
And I was going to add to that actually my brother, why I'm here today, he was only 22 years old, never smoked a day in his life. Same to your sister-in-law, was a college student, actually training for a marathon, and in top health. And same, no one in our family smoked. So, he's definitely one of those statistics of people who have never smoked and got lung cancer at a very early age.
Patrice, sorry you lost your brother. He has a great story, though. I mean, other than the sad part of dying from lung cancer, he was a pretty inspirational guy, wasn't he?
He was. He truly, in his 4 years, he had lung cancer for 4 years, from 22 to 26. He did more, I feel like, than I could do in my lifetime of getting awareness out. He ended up graduating still from grad school up in New York, changed his life course, went down to Washington, D.C., worked for a nonprofit cancer organization, lobbied Congress for money, you know, to help raise awareness and get money and research towards lung cancer. So it really changed his whole life focus. You know, we always wore these bracelets that he had a will-win attitude. And honestly, and that's why I'm here today. He always said, don't sit and cry about it. Get out and do something. So that's what I'm doing now, is trying to be positive and kind of continue his mission.
Your brother had another great motto, didn't he?
Yes.
What was that?
So he always said, life is 90% of, or 10% what happens to you and 90% how you react to that. So again, you know, sometimes life throws you curveballs and you got to take with that and be positive and change it into something.
Yeah, that's
positive.
That's a powerful message. Yeah. How did they find out he had lung cancer? Was this something that they found late because no one thought that at his age he could possibly have it?
You know what? It was late in the sense that, he, like I said, he was running and he actually went to a school nurse. You know, he started having like a cough, you know, continued cough. And actually the school nurse just said, you know, a lot of kids from out of state have allergies. It's probably just allergies. You know, you're not from New York. So he kept trying, and I remember him saying, you know, I'm really, like, sending us emails, you know, I'm going up my steps to my dorm room and I'm out of breath, it's weird, I can't breathe, you know, and they didn't know if he had some other weird infection. So he actually finished his finals, I remember, drove back to Pennsylvania and went straight, called my dad and said, meet me at the emergency room, I'm having all this chest pain. So his was, you know, he kept going with it for, you know, probably months. They actually said he could have had it for years, slow growing, not knowing.
Wow.
But, yeah, and then they end up finding all this fluid in his lungs, doing CAT scans, and it even took them probably like a week or two to figure out what it really was.
And that's not usually unusual.
Yeah,
70% of lung cancer is usually found in the later stages. So if we talk of general lung cancer, which is non-small cell lung cancer, that usually has four stages, number one being early and number four being considered the latest, where there's disease that has spread outside of the lung or to the opposite side of where the spot originally was. And so 70% of patients will present in stage three or stage four disease.
And that was the stage that my sister-in-law, in her case, it was stage three when they found it. But fortunately for her, so far so good with the treatment she's going through. Kathy, you know, we know that non-smokers get lung cancer. That was your case.
Yes.
You're a non-smoker. This doesn't diminish the message, though, that there are a lot of risks attached to tobacco. Tobacco is still smoking is still a big risk factor for getting lung cancer, isn't it?
It is, but I would like to point out, I know, you know, it's highly related to lung cancer, but I would also like for people to be aware there could be upwards to maybe 10-15% who didn't smoke. But of those who had a smoking history, the majority of people, when they are diagnosed, are non-smoking. In other words, they have heeded the call of the many years that cigarettes are bad, mm-hmm. and they have quit. And yet they have lung cancer, and then, sadly, because it's been so highly stigmatized, there has not been the research to help them fight the disease. We recently had legislation passed and approved for Medicare, Medicaid, and now through the Affordable Care Act, people at high risk. There is now a tool, CT screening for lung cancer. We finally have something to offer all these people who did the right thing and quit smoking. And I'm very, very appreciative of that. So there is hope on the horizon.
And that's probably true since about 2002. We have more ex-smokers, non-ongoing mm-hmm. smokers, than current smokers. And certainly, you know, other things that cause our risk factors for lung cancer are occupational exposure, people who've worked with exposures to asbestos, people who've worked in metals, cadmiums, radon exposure, which is just a natural gas. We see a lot of individuals potentially who have had radon exposure in their homes and they don't even know it and develop lung cancer and have never smoked a day in their life. And then familial, that especially in individuals who develop lung cancer at an early age, that perhaps we know that there are genes or chromosomes that are involved with lung cancer that can be familially inherited. So these are additional risk factors that we have to take into account when people develop lung cancer.
How much do we really know how much of a risk secondhand smoke happens to be?
it does increase your risk. And if you were exposed to secondhand smoke prior to age 25, you can increase your smoking risk multiple folds than if you've never been exposed to it. And actually, secondhand smoke is considered a primary cancer killer now, lung cancer killer.
Which was probably my case. I grew up, my father was a heavy smoker. So from the time I was an infant, I was around smoking. I was diagnosed by chance with lung cancer at age 41.
Wow.
And hadn't smoked.
So that would be a shock. You probably think I'm way too young to have lung cancer.
Well, it was. I was diagnosed and I was telling Dr. Pina this. I was actually diagnosed first with breast cancer. And within a month, just because of a routine chest x-ray, they found a spot on my lung, which led to a diagnosis of also lung cancer. And that was 15 years ago.
And you're still going, though. That's the good thing, Kathy.
Right.
I am.
Right.
And I'm a stage. And just for anyone who might be listening, who possibly has lung cancer, to be hopeful, I've been stage 4 for 10 or 11 of those years.
And I was going to say, Kathy's a great example of giving someone hope, because I know my brother was always looking for, like, well, how long will I live? The statistics online, you know, when you read are so grim sometimes. But once I met Kathy, I was like, wow, he would have loved to have met her and had that hope, because she doesn't just living, she's going full force energy.
What's the survival rate for lung cancer? Is it what, 17% or somewhere around that?
Depending on the stage. So early lung cancer, which is a cancer that's found probably with a spot, I call it them spots and dots. So a spot that can be seen on a chest x-ray is just about a centimeter, slightly above about a half an inch in size. So I always make the analogy to being on a beach. You have grains of sand, pebbles, rocks, stones, and boulders. The boulders are those bigger ones that you see and you go, oh my gosh, later stage. But if I ask everyone to pick up a grain of sand, they'd never be able to do that. So those are millimeters. So CAT scans are so sensitive now that we're picking up those grains of sand, the pebbles. A rock and a stone are just about a centimeter, a little bit above a centimeter, so you can see those on chest x-ray. And it's not unusual. I call them, oh, by the way, diagnosis. You know, like my little lady who's 95.
I don't want to hear that, oh, by the way.
Yeah, my little 95-year-old lady who's sweet as can be, and she tripped at home on a rug and went to the emergency department for chest pain because she thought she had a broken rib, and was found to have, you know, a 1.5 centimeter nodule, you know, which turned out to be a cancer. And we find them in all ages, from the gamut. My youngest was 21, and my oldest was 95 and elected not to do anything for it. And I have a 90-year-old who did want to have surgery, and I'm seeing him now at age 95.
So it's a misperception to think this is an older person's disease.
Right. It can happen with anybody. Most age between, you know, about 50 to 60 years of age.
We'll continue our conversation about lung cancer after the break, and you can join the discussion at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guests this afternoon are Dr. Elsie Pina, University of Cincinnati College of Medicine and also UC Health, Patrice Urban, an advocate with the Lung Cancer Alliance, and Kathy Sinclair, a lung cancer survivor who also works with the Lung Cancer Alliance. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Kathy, are there statistics about local cases of lung cancer? Are we more or less prone to getting it in this area?
We are, definitely. Sadly, the state that I live in, right across the river, Kentucky, has led the nation for a number of years, lung cancer death. Ohio and Indiana, I hate to tell you, are right in there with us. And there's a high concentration in the Midwest and down into the deep south. Across the country, we're in an area where there is a high mortality for lung cancer.
And that's probably true. Definitely, if we look at the Ohio statistics, there were about 64,000 new cancer deaths in general, and 10,000 were specifically lung cancer. And again, lung cancer was ahead of all the other cancers. And in terms of deaths, we have about 24,000 cancer deaths, and about 7,000 a year are related to lung cancer right in our wonderful state of Ohio.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Pina, actually, there are different forms of lung cancer, aren't there? There's not just lung cancer.
Right.
There's a lot of different things that it can take shape as.
Right. We usually categorize it into two big broad groups, non-small cell lung cancer and small cell lung cancer. Non-small cell lung cancer being adenocarcinoma, which is the primary lung cancer now seen both in men and women, and a larger proportion of adenocarcinoma in women. Squamous cell carcinoma, which has a stronghold with smoking. Large cell lung cancer, which is all part of non-small cell. And this type of lung cancer can be treated, and hopefully surgical treatment for cure. And then small cell lung cancer is the type of lung cancer that we treat specifically with chemotherapy. And then there's certainly other modalities between the two of them.
How does it affect different groups and sexes and races? Does it manifest differently in different people?
Well, what we know, if we look at it between men and women, women, we've become increasingly emancipated. So we've been able to smoke, we've been able to vote, we've been able to run for presidency. And now we find as well that we have one-ups. There are some gender differences potentially just by being female, that we are actually, if we smoke, we are more susceptible to smoking and develop lung cancer with smoking less, that there are hormonal influences that increase our risk for lung cancer. There are biological effects, and these are specifically with certain enzymes and proteins within our body that help us metabolize the carcinogens, the things that cause cancer, with nicotine and the tar and the poly aromatic hydrocarbons that are produced by tobacco. And we seem to have a larger amount of elements that create those bad things in us. And we have a smaller amount of the enzymes that allow us to detoxify. So we increase our risk of developing lung cancer.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And Dr. Pina, what are some of the signs and the symptoms of lung cancer?
That is exactly it. The whole premise is that we want to find these before we have signs and symptoms. I call it the cat out of the bag if we have signs and symptoms. But signs and symptoms, should you have them, you know, a cough that's unexplained. You're allowed to have a cough for a little while, but if you're having cough weeks on end for greater than 3 months, that's considered a chronic cough and should really be evaluated. Unexplained chest pain, unexplained shortness of breath, coughing up of blood, unexplained fevers, chills, night sweats, or all of a sudden your activity level, you really have become less active, your ability to do activities have changed.
Like Patrice's brother went through.
And certainly unexplained weight loss. So, you know, for me, every day is a puzzle because people come to me with all these kinds of symptoms all day long, and not everyone's picture is the same. And so I have to see what the risk factors are, what types of complaints in terms of symptoms that people have, and then try to put the pieces of the puzzle together.
Yeah, that was your brother's case. I mean, all of a sudden he just wasn't physically able to do what he
thought
he should do as a 22-year-old.
It was almost like he felt like he had the flu, like just wasn't leaving, kept coughing, and they kept telling him it was allergies, he couldn't get up, he was very winded going up steps, same, and he kept thinking, what's wrong with me, I'm just sick, So exactly, something, and he knew something, his body was wrong, but he, kept going, and the school nurses were like, oh, it's just allergies, which, no fault to them, it wouldn't have saved him. You know what I mean? It was something they said he had probably had for years.
That's such a shame. Was there any family history of lung cancer?
None. That's what I mean, and no one ever smoked. We have five kids. He was the youngest of the five. We're all healthy here today, and our parents never smoked, nothing. I know.
So nobody ever figured out why your brother got lung cancer?
No, and we kept asking. We kept coming up with theories. And I remember the doctor, we were at Hopkins in Baltimore, one of the top in the nation. And because everyone across the country actually looked at his case, just because it was so rare to have someone so young with no reason. And they basically said, there's no God-given reason on earth. Sometimes things like that just happen. There's not always a reason. But radon, we did look at a lot because he did have a bedroom in the basement at some point. Now, my dad had the house radon tested and everything, and it was an exposed basement where, you know, it wasn't totally underground. But now that I moved here and live in Cincinnati, that was like my first thing on the home inspection. I will say to people, definitely get your radon tests. And, you know, we have a radon emitter, like machine thing in our house just to make sure. So I do think that's important because radon is odorless, colorless. You don't know you're breathing. Everyone's breathing in it every day. But if you're in a basement a lot, that could impact you.
It really does raise your risk of cancer, then.
It does raise your risk of cancer.
And that's usually
because usually you always hear people who say, that's not real.
No, it's very real. And especially in individuals where there is no known, discern an actual risk factor, we will recommend that patients have their, or individuals have their home inspected for radon to see if it's high emittance.
It's actually quite common in this area because of all the rockiness. I know in Kentucky, and I would suspect the same for Ohio and Indiana, that you can call and get the radon test, and they'll send it to you for free. You send it back in, they test it for free. It's an easy thing to do. Everyone should inquire, go online, radon test for your state, and it's well worth it.
You know, going back to my sister-in-law's experience, she had a persistent cough, and her daughter said, you should go get that checked out. So she went to the doctor. The doctor says, well, you know, you're on high blood pressure medication. That could be causing this. So they tried that. They took her off the high blood pressure medication. Sure enough, the cough went away. But to the doctor's credit, he told her, I want to do one more thing just to make sure. So he did a chest x-ray, and that's when they found the tumor in her lung. And she's gone through surgery and chemotherapy and radiation. And the good news for her is that her most recent body scan showed no signs of cancer.
That's great.
But is that common that you come up across lung cancer kind of accidentally?
Yes, especially in my office, you know, or in the lung doctor's office. By the time we see it, I think we have a higher clinical suspicion. That's what we call when we're not certain what's going on. And, you know, we start asking the questions. A classic example is, you know, I was seeing a husband for something else. His wife got ill and started coughing up blood and said, can I come see you? She was a non-smoker, never smoked a day in her life. And she had a huge softball-sized tumor in her lung that was blocking one of the pathways, and the tumor was growing inside her lung, and she coughed up blood. So it's not unusual.
513-419-7100 to join our conversation, and let's talk with Pauline in Clifton. Good afternoon, Pauline. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome, Pauline. Go ahead. What's your question or your comment?
Okay. I have long waited for an opportunity to talk about a cure, which is called stereotactic radiation. I have had lung cancer 3 times. I've been very, very lucky each time. The first time, I have always been diagnosed early by accident. The first time, I had what they do typically, which is surgery. 10 years later, by accident, it was discovered that I had it again.
I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah.
Right. Well, it was long. And in any case, after the lung surgery, I've never had chemotherapy, and I've never had radiation. So, because I was always early diagnosed. The second time when I was diagnosed, I was sent to, this is what typically happens, you get a diagnosis, you're sent to a doctor. The doctor sends you to a surgeon. The surgeon says, you'll have surgery. I said, I won't, because the recovery from surgery is very difficult. And I remembered it very well. And so I kept insisting that I would not have it. The surgeon and the lung specialist that I saw at that time both kept pushing me to have it.
Well, Pauline, let's ask Dr. Pina to comment on the type of treatment that you're talking about, the stereotactic radiation, and best wishes to you. Yes. Thank you.
So what I will say is with the stereotactic radiation therapy, we usually use that for individuals who have lung function that it essentially is not adequate for surgery. So if you have someone who has severe emphysema, has severe heart failure, and really cannot be operated on, we will use that and we'll zone in and zap with radiation the tumor. There are studies that likely will come out at some point to sort of see is that as effective as a curative surgery. Because when people
have,
So when you have lung cancer and we want to find it at an early age, you really want to do surgery that's surgery for treatment and curative intent. You know, we want to take that out, throw it in the wastebasket, and never see it again. And so there are not head-to-head studies yet between stereotactic radiation treatment and surgery. But we know from studies on individuals who really cannot undergo surgery that we have people living, surviving greater than 5 years with stereotactic surgery.
Kathy, Pauline's experience, too, was similar to yours in that, you have had cancer several times now, right?
Correct, yes. And I can relate and understand. The lung surgery is not easy. Anyone recently diagnosed, please don't let that deter you. I've always been a big proponent of getting it out of my body, personally. And it is challenging. I have to tell you, though, I had what they had called a wedge resection to my lung, which is a small, because mine was a very, as Dr. Pina described, you know, that 1 centimeter. And I have complete lung function. So lungs, and I don't know the degree, the doctor would know better than I, the degree to which it regenerates. And then I've had... I became stage 4 10 years ago. 11, pardon me. Isn't that wonderful? Time is catching up where I don't even quite know the exact dates. But
it's a good thing, actually, in this case.
So when it came back, it went to my skull. So I've had multiple surgeries to my skull, and I've had quite a bit removed, including the skull. So that could maybe explain some things, I suppose. But and still, you know, you just stay hopeful. Because things are advancing, it has changed in 15 years, the changes, the drugs. From the time I was first diagnosed, and then my first surgery to my skull, at that point a new drug was out there, a targeted therapy, and I was tested for it. And I tested strongly positive that that drug would work. And I took it for quite a long time. I took it for about a year and a half, and then I'm an interesting case that my tumors come back one at a time. And I said, well, how do we know there's a tumor there? And I pulled myself off that drug thinking, aha. And the cancer came back about a year and a half later. I had more surgery, happily to have surgery, and then went back on that drug. And I've had a very long run with it. So even if, you know, when it should come back, I stay hopeful because things are changing, you know. There is more awareness in the medical field about treating this disease. So.
You've got my admiration, Kathy. I mean, you really are a survivor.
It's truly
amazing.
But yeah. I think it's important too that she's right. Like not only in the last 15 years, but in these last 2 years, the stuff that's being passed through Congress, and we're finally getting some funding and different bills going through. That because of the awareness, and because we're finally getting this message out. Research funding, it's going to make such a huge difference. So the more we can, as a whole, get this message out and continue, because that's why breast cancer is so curable and pediatric cancer, because so many people are donating and there's going research dollars there. So I think that's part of our whole message is, yeah.
I think there's fabulous momentum. I've seen a change since the time I've been a medical student to now being, a full professor at the university how we approach, how we look at lung cancer. You know, the old days of just looking at it, it's just smoking, is gone. You know, it's your fault. It's not anybody's fault.
Right.
It's not, we don't say you've got lung cancer, go take your pain pills, get your papers in order, we'll see you. You are not necessarily, if you have chemo, you're not throwing up endlessly. And they make beautiful wigs for women now that you can't even tell if it's their hair or not. So it's wonderful. And surgery, we have video-assisted thoracoscopic surgery now, so we're no longer making these big incisions across the chest and spreading your ribs open to try to cut that tumor out. They're done through little poke holes with little scopes, and they take it out in a little baggie through in between the ribs, and you stay in the hospital 2 to 3 days, and you're home, and you're much more active and back to work and bouncing.
That's amazing.
And we check you out to make sure you can undergo surgery and that you have adequate lung function when you're done with surgery, because no one wants to make you a lung cripple once you've gone through the surgery or the radiation therapy for treatment.
Barbara called and she wanted to know what tests would someone ask for to screen them for lung cancer, and is this something that would be covered by insurance?
So interesting. We do have lung cancer screening programs, and what I'd recommend is, you know, certainly to check for a true screening program that's what we call multidisciplinary, with lung doctors, surgery doctors, radiology physicians, radiation therapy physicians, pathologists, all reviewing these films. And specifically, there are recommendations. So if you're 55 to 74, based on the lung cancer screening paper that came out in the New England Journal from that testing and multidisciplinary research project that came out, you had to be between 55 and 73, 30-pack year history of smoking, and or have stopped smoking within 15 years and have no symptoms. So as a screening program, you can't be somebody who already has a spot on a known chest x-ray or have coughing or shortness of breath. You have to be asymptomatic.
But you can now, through the Affordable Care Act and just recently now with Medicare, if you do have a history of smoking and are of the age of 54, I believe it is, mm-hmm. that, yes, discuss with your doctor about the CT screening. If you're wondering, there are, for example, I know Dr. Pina, University of Cincinnati, is a center of excellence for this screening, but if you go to www.lungcanceralliance.org and look for that screening, they can tell you across the country. So if you're not just in this area and you happen to hear of this, look for that. But it is if you've had a history of smoking. That's where we have a tool.
And you can find that link on the WVXU.org website as well. Take a short break. We'll talk more about lung cancer afterward. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. We continue our conversation about lung cancer. My guests this afternoon are Dr. Elsie Pina with the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine and UC Health, Patrice Urban, an advocate with the Lung Cancer Alliance, and Kathy Sinclair, a lung cancer survivor who also works with the Lung Cancer Alliance. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk with Robert in Norwood. Good afternoon, Robert. You're on Cincinnati Edition. Good, thank you. How about yourself?
I'm fine, thanks.
Good.
Can't breathe. I'm smoking too much.
Oh, no.
In any case, I'm familiar with your with UC's low-dose CT lung cancer screening. That program, I guess, is a couple of years old now. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. How many cases have you identified, and what has been the outcome of those cases?
We've had approximately, I believe, 10 cases that have been diagnosed, and my last update, I believe they were all within early stage lung cancer rather than late stage lung cancer. I'd have to check those statistics specifically, but we just recently had a lung cancer seminar, and that information was presented there. So to the best of my recollection, I apologize, I think majority of them were early stage lung cancer, as we would predict.
I happen to know somebody personally who, before this became a practice that is now has a protocol, and as I was mentioning the insurance coverage, there was a study that was conducted to see if this was something that could be viable. And it was in 2010, they stopped the study early because they found such a survival rate of testing with CT as compared to not. It had a high incidence of survivability with that, and comparative to mammography for women. But I personally knew somebody who happened to be through her work at the VA, be part of that program, had a smoking history, no symptoms, and lo and behold, she found out she had lung cancer, and it was caught early, and she's doing quite well.
Right. And the data from that says that it decreases morbidity and mortality by 20%. And it's the first time ever, you know, it compared low-dose chest CTs for screening versus chest x-rays. And we actually showed that people can survive and have decreased death rates based on that. And for the past 20 years, there's been an active group of physicians, researchers, and certainly patients with cancer have been really pushing to finally make lung cancer something that's screened. It's one of the only cancers that was not screened. Breast cancer was screened, prostate cancer, colon cancer, all have been screened. And the reason why screening has happened much earlier was because it showed by screening these individuals that you could decrease the death rate. And it never was shown that with checking sputums or chest x-rays. But this low-dose CT screening is really effective. And we are picking people up earlier, so they're not at late stage, and they're surviving longer and decreasing the overall death rate, morbidity.
Robert, thank you for the phone call. We appreciate it. Let's talk with Stephanie from Indianapolis. And Stephanie, you just happened to be passing through town today, right?
Yes, that's right. thank you for taking my call. I had a question regarding, you know, the debate about legalization of medical marijuana and recreational marijuana usage, and if any studies have been, or if you know of any studies that have been done that show any correlation with marijuana usage, smoking in particular, and lung cancer. You hear all the time about tobacco and causing lung cancer, but do you know if marijuana would have the same effect?
The answer is there is some data that says marijuana can be associated with lung cancer. As to the degree, the data doesn't say that specifically, but it is considered potentially a risk factor, as is snuff, as is any other, using oral tobacco is associated with head and neck cancer. So there is some, but I can't tell you to what percent.
Okay.
Stephanie, thank you for the phone call. We appreciate it. You know, that brings up another good point. I always hear people who say, I smoke cigars, and they seem to think that that's some kind of insulation against getting cancer, but that's not true, is it?
It's not really. Cigars are associated with lung cancer, probably not to the same degree as smoking cigarettes. And if we think about it, the irony of all of it, I looked in terms of, in 1900, people smoked less than 100 cigarettes a day. By 1960, folks were smoking 4,500 cigarettes a year, which is roughly 225 packs of cigarettes. So we look to see how much you smoke by figuring out your pack years. So if you smoke 2 packs per day and you smoke for 20 years, you have a 40-pack year history of smoking. A 20-pack year history of smoking or greater increases your risk for lung cancer. And I think to put it into perspective is when you're 16 years old and you pick up that cigarette maybe for the first time, my youngest was 6 years old that I took care of. But at 16, by the time you're 36, if you have smoked 1 pack per day, you will have smoked 20 pack years. And you are 36 years old. You are still in the prime of your life.
So
it's pretty amazing. To put it into those numbers and to see that, you're still youthful, but you have given your lungs an old approach already, and you've set yourself potentially up for further problems, not just lung cancer, because if you develop emphysema, if you can't breathe, nothing much else matters. And if we look at the ABCs, A comes first and then comes B. So you have airway and breathing. And if you don't have those two things in life, really, you're probably pretty limited.
Yeah. Isn't that the truth? Well, Patrice, tell us about the Lung Cancer Alliance. How long has the organization been around, and what kind of work? Kathy can join in on this, too, since you're both with the Lung Cancer Alliance.
Sure. Well, I got involved, like I said, with Lung Cancer Alliance because my brother had started doing that in Washington, D.C. They are based out of Washington, D.C., but they have at a national level, but then they have chapters, like we're the Cincinnati/Northern Kentucky chapter. They are really all about awareness and advocacy. So they're not really there necessarily for fundraising, but they truly are there. They set up a phone buddy system. So if someone is diagnosed with lung cancer, they really want to be there to help support. They have, if you go on their website, different stories and blogs, you know, to help relate to people. They also were one of the ones that really took a big advocacy role in getting the bill, you know, passed through Congress to help raise more funds for lung cancer. Every year in November, if people don't know this, November is Lung Cancer Awareness Month. We do a Shine a Light on Lung Cancer. Again, November 13th this year was the national date, but usually somewhere in your area, you can look up and attend they used to call it a vigil. Now they just call it Shine a Light on Lung Cancer event. And we have different doctors speak, you know, a way for people to get together, to have camaraderie, you know, support, or even to honor those or remember those that we've lost. And Kathy can fill in with some other things. Yeah.
They began actually in 1995. And as an organization, they are based in Washington, D.C., primarily because that is where a large part of funding for research happens to exist. And that's through our government, through the National Cancer Institute and the National Institute of Health. And so a big thing that they do is to advocate for increased funding. And it is through that that this research is done that is so critical. Just to give you an idea of the research, lung cancer has been sorely underfunded compared to the other cancers, especially when you take into effect the number of deaths. Now, over the last few years, because of increased awareness, that is improving. For example, as I said, I'm a breast cancer survivor as well. Today, the five-year survival rate for breast cancer is at 89%, and the funding through the federal government for research is sitting at about $560 million for breast cancer. Lung cancer, because I personally think because of the stigma, has lagged behind. People assume, well, you smoked, you deserved it, even though most of the people...
Right, it's your own fault.
Exactly.
Right.
Most people getting diagnosed early are former or never smokers. The funding, and our survival rate's about 17%, the funding for that is now at $286 million. So there are, as a woman, you know, twice as many of us die from lung as from breast, but they've been so good, and this is what we're trying to do in the lung cancer community, is to get that awareness. They've been so good at raising awareness. And thus, with increased funding, you have increased survivorship. And so that's what we'd like to see happen for lung cancer.
Exactly. And so we have a color, too.
Yeah.
And our color is turquoise. And we do not have a little ribbon. It's a swirl, sort of breath of air. It's called Lung Force through the American Lung Association. And it's fabulous. So next to the beautiful, powerful pink, we have the powerful blue, turquoise, and lung cancer awareness in women, and we don't really discriminate, so we'll say lung cancer awareness as well in men. So it's fabulous.
That's the big thing, though, Patrice, is raising the awareness, isn't it?
Yes.
That's, what would you say, 90% of the battle right there, maybe?
It is, and I think it's getting rid of the stigma and raising that awareness. Is that the keys to, because that's what breast cancer did, and then how breast cancer, you see pink everywhere. We were just talking about this at the grocery stores, you know, the NFL, everybody is so aware of the pink and everyone's donating money. If we could get rid of the stigma of lung cancer, more people would donate money. It would increase survivor rates, and just increasing awareness that it, you know, it's not your fault, you know, that everyone, there's no reason, you know what I mean? No one deserves to die.
Kathy, what about the local support groups, especially those that would aid survivors? What's out there?
Locally, as Patrice mentioned, we have, through the Lung Cancer Alliance, the Shine a Light events. Mm-hmm. You can also, and Dr. Pina mentioned the American Lung Association. Our event was in November. Just for those listening, May 30th, the American Lung Association with their Lung Force, who have marketed this color turquoise with the breath, are having a walk in Cincinnati And I think, I'm not sure, there may be information on your website to that. If people want to look for something that they can attend, it's going to be at the Otto Arm Letter Memorial Park. And if you go to Lung Force, you can get information. There is locally the Cancer Support Community, which has offices in Blue Ash and in Northern Kentucky. They have an office, just over the river. I can't, escaping me at the moment. Just, but if you go online, CSC, Cancer Support Community,
there's Free to Breathe.
There's another one that, as far as support, I would like to mention, and I do this myself, through Lung Cancer Alliance. If you go to their website, they have a program called the Phone Buddy. And I am a phone buddy to somebody, where they will, if you are somebody with cancer or a caregiver or a loved one and you need some support, you have questions, you can call their toll-free number. They have people there to answer you during business hours, and they will link you up with somebody across the country that also has a similar experience to you. It is harder to find support for lung cancer. I think partly the numbers of survivorship are lower, and sometimes I suspect, you do have sometimes a slightly older population, maybe they're not quite as inclined to go out to events or to groups. But you can generally get that. I would also mention that our local Shine a Light, we have a Facebook page. So Shine a Light on Lung Cancer Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky. We will be putting more links to that. We are working on developing a website for people so that they can go to find all the information they need as far as, help out there. But there are a number that, if you were to Google that you can find help. So Lung Cancer Alliance, the American Lung Association, Boniadi Area, Free to Breathe. So,
and I think university as well has a support group. And
okay.
Hope, Breathe, Fight is our motto at UC. So all of those at the fingertips through the web.
How important are all these support groups to helping people heal, Patrice?
I think it's super important. Like, I know with my brother, if he could have met Kathy back then and he could have got linked up, that would have really helped him, because I think right when you're diagnosed, you're in such shock and all you're looking for, like, he was online constantly, like, trying to find someone else who he could relate to, who could give him some hope, like, yes, I'm alive and it's 5 or 10 years later. So I know he was just constantly looking and, got discouraged at first, not finding great stories. But then he did link up with some other younger men like him in their 20s, and they would talk and email. And I think that was really, really helpful because they totally understand what you're going through and the emotion, everything that you want to really talk to someone who's had it. So I do think it's super important. I know it was for him.
Dr. Pina, do you think we ever reach a point where we've cured lung cancer?
I'm certainly hoping we get there. That's a definite. I think there's a group, a force in this country, in our very own city, in our backyard, and we're really pushing for awareness, early detection, and cure. And if we could stomp out lung cancer in, my lifetime, I would be more than tickled. Part of that is recognizing the risk factors. So if you smoke, quit. It's never too late to quit. If you don't smoke, don't ever pick it up. If you have other risk factors, try to minimize those. Some you can't. If it's hereditary, we can't just get rid of those.
Well, thanks, Dr. Pina, Patrice, Kathy, for joining us this afternoon. We appreciate it. Dr. Elsie Pina, University of Cincinnati College of Medicine Associate Professor and UC Health Pulmonologist, Patrice Urban, an advocate with the Lung Cancer Alliance, and Kathy Sinclair, a lung cancer survivor who also works with the Lung Cancer Alliance.